If we were all full-time yogis in Tibet, we would, in, I suppose, the spirit of what we're trying to do today, meditate on that, on those instructions for a while. And, you know, for a while could be a while. Until you come to have a realization of what the instructions are trying to lead you to. And so the point of all of this Mahamudra approach is that it's not that you come up with the right answer, because the right answer is, I mean, given to you. You've all known that for years, that the mind is insubstantial. Or what does that mean, actually? When you look for the mind in stillness, do you find a thing that is still? Do you find anything with substantial characteristics? So it's not as if you are going to sit in meditation and then observe insubstantiality. Because what you're trying to observe would be an absence. So when would you know whether you had seen an absence or not? There's just, I guess it's, you know, nothing rather than something. But what you are doing is you're looking for substantial characteristics and you just don't find any. You just keep coming up empty. And so, anyway, it's as we proceed, you'll find out, I think, or discover more and more how our ordinary experience, and probably in this meditation that we're going to do next, the movements of the mind, how even though we could say the right answer, there is an absence of substantial characteristics of the mind, we relate to it as if it really is solid, concrete, substantial, and has a heaviness, a power to control my behavior, to make me upset, all of this. You know, what is that has that power if it is insubstantial? If you can't find any qualities, you know, of shape, color, form, location, all of these things that we normally, the things that we can attribute to or characteristics by which we know substantial things. So this gets to be very interesting then in our meditation. How do we come to know something that doesn't have any substantial characteristics, the way that we usually come to know substantial things in this world? But so, of course, that's only part of what we are intended to when we go off to our cave to meditate for a year and then come back to report to the guru about what we've discovered. It's not that just there's no substantial characteristics, because do we conclude then that there is nothing there at all? And so that is the paradox, or this state that we are left with, is a state, basically, where you can't say that there is anything that you can find, but you can't say that there is a nothingness either, that you discover a nothingness. So what you're left in this state, then, that is neither there nor not there. There's not neither something truly there, nor is there nothing also. So this is, you know, and again, the point is not just to have a conceptual knowing of that. I mean, that's interesting. You know, that would be interesting conversation to have with people. But if you really come to realize that directly, and this becomes your experience of the mind, it is somehow beyond existence in that you can't find existing qualities. It's beyond that. But it is beyond non-existence as well. So there's nothing that you can find when you look for it, but still it is the bedrock of knowing. It makes experience possible. There is something in that that you discover when the mind is still. And so Mahamudra begins with basically having achieved your nominal stillness of our facsimile of shamatha, or the real thing of shamatha, then everything becomes much easier, apparently, when there's just, you know, for long periods of time, no movements of the mind whatsoever. Then you can really get down to the nature without distraction. But in this technique that we're going to do in this session, we are going to look at the mind of in movement. And this is really very concisely described by the Mahasiddhamaitripa again when he is describing the three types of shamatha practice. The first being shamatha focused on signs, and he has a long description of that, but we're not doing signs today. But the second then is, so the first is shamatha focused on signs, then shamatha focused on conceptualization, or the movements of the mind, thoughts. And then the third one is shamatha focused on non-conceptualization, basically what is left over, awareness of awareness, what is left over when there is no conceptualization, no movements of mind. So it's apparently easier to start with the mind in stillness and to try come to its nature, because for most of us, the nature of the mind in movement is obscured by movement itself. The nature of thought is obscured by thought itself. Because we become so entranced, we become fused with these thoughts rather than being able to maintain a distance so that we can observe them. So this is what the Mahasiddhamaitripa gave as his quintessential instructions. He said, whatever virtuous and non-virtuous thoughts arise, steadily and non-conceptually observe their nature. So whatever thoughts arise, virtuous or non-virtuous, steadily and non-conceptually observe their nature. By so doing, these thoughts are calmed in non-grasping. Awareness vividly arises, clear and empty. This is what we were trying to get to. Clear and luminous and lucid are all synonyms in Dzogchen and Mahamudra. And so luminosity refers to the knowing capacity, or the capacity of the mind, you could say, to know, to be aware, to experience. So this, whenever you see clear and empty, this, you know, is referring to that non-dual nature of the mind, of luminosity and emptiness. So it is sustained in the nature, this awareness vividly arises, clear and empty, with no object of grasping. So even though these appearances are arising to the mind, they don't arise as anything to grasp onto because you are seeing their nature. And it is sustained in the nature of self-liberation in which it recognizes itself. Again, direct the mind to whatever thoughts arise, and without acceptance or rejection, you will recognize your own nature. So this really is the core instruction for how to, or what stance we take towards thoughts, images, appearances, when these movements of the mind arise to a mind in stillness. So, first of all, it is a radical impartiality. Whatever thoughts arise, whether they're virtuous or non-virtuous, normally we think that our whole Buddhist practice is cultivating virtuous thoughts, or, I mean, that's one approach, and that if I just fill my mind with virtuous thoughts constantly and do affirmations almost of, you know, and just think of emptiness continually. What are we doing? We are filling our minds with conceptuality, basically, which is what in the very opening lines that I quoted today of Gyatro Rinpoche, he said, that is a mind of samsara. Regardless of the virtue or the non-virtue of the thought, if it's a conceptual thought, it's basically rooted in samsara. And then we'll talk more in the next session parse these lines again, because you could go off to your cave with just these lines of the Mahasiddha Maitripa and have each one of these lines reveal more and more to you as you experience more and more subtle and deeper states. But again, the whole point is relaxation and without acceptance or rejection, just being present with these thoughts as they arise and not being concerned with their content. So Dujam Link put this: if you forcefully suppress the thought process while focusing your mind single-pointedly on such things as a stick or a pebble, then many obsessive thoughts will arise, as if you had blocked an irrigation canal, and your body, speech, and mind may become sharply uncomfortable. In that case, loosely relax and watch your thoughts from afar, clearly observing whatever arises. That which observes is called mindfulness or awareness. That which is observed is called movement. And resting in that state is called stillness. Identify them as such and meditate. So this is exactly what we are going to be trying to do in our meditation as appearances arise. We are not going to try to block them, and you might have your experience while you are trying to do breath meditation that these thoughts just assail you, that you're standing under a torrent or a waterfall. There are just so many thoughts. But here what we are going to do, the key is, as Mahasiddha Maitripa said, if you see the nature of these thoughts as they arise, they are calmed and non-grasping. So there is nothing to grasp onto, so stillness of awareness can remain still, rather than if we see these thoughts as being something other than just mind and the mind in movement, if we see them as being substantial, as being something real there, something that has the power to disturb me, something that has the power to make me happy. If I see these as something other than just movements of mind, then I grasp onto these and I go wandering with these thoughts then. I become the thoughts. I identify with the subjective thoughts, or I go wandering as if in a non-lucid dream with these thoughts. And I wake up 10 minutes later and I wonder, what was I supposed to be meditating on again? I have been at the Bruins game, or I've been at Thanksgiving, or I've been shopping for creating a shopping list for Black Friday. Didn't mean to bring that up. So crucial to this experience of a still mind observing the mind in movement is to recognize the difference between thinking a thought and knowing that thoughts are arising. So if we are thinking a thought, if I am thinking a thought, then I am the owner of that thought. I have already become identified with it. I've already become fused with it. But if I am simply watching thoughts arise, then I can see, I have the power to, and the distance, you could say the witnessing distance, to observe these appearances and observe their nature. His Holiness the Dalai Lama wrote in one of his Dzogchen commentaries that the conceptual mind is not self-sustaining. And so this is really important for our experience of the conceptual mind. If we are going to view it without being seduced and entranced by it, we have to be able to view it without putting it on artificial life support. And then we recognize that the conceptual mind, unless we engage with it, unless we grasp onto these conceptual appearances, they self-release. They are not self-sustaining. And so this is what we are going to do in this next 12-minute guided meditation, is view the mind in stillness, view the mind in motion from a point of stillness, and to maintain the stillness of our awareness as movements of the mind arise, abide, and dissolve. So find a comfortable position. Begin by discovering the relaxed state of the body, settled in its natural state, by releasing tension wherever you discover it. And discover the natural state of speech, the effortless silence of the mind in stillness. And settle the mind in its natural state. The moment-to-moment presence, non-conceptual, luminous, able to illuminate appearances, that is, make them knowable and to know them, but without becoming those appearances. The instructions for Mahamudra and Dzogchen always state that when you get to these practices of awareness, you should meditate with your eyes open. But your gaze is just unfocused, downcast, and not really landing on anything. You're not seeing anything. Now, as you rest in this natural state of stillness, movements are bound to arise, the movements of mind. Thoughts, images, memories. Whatever they are, and whether they're pleasant or unpleasant, virtuous or non-virtuous, adopt a radical impartiality about these thoughts. Just let them be without having to do anything about them. With the awareness of the present moment, know the movement of the present moment. Recognize these thoughts or mental appearances. In the instant that they arise, and watch and witness their entire life cycle, these thoughts. They arise, they're present for some time, and then they dissolve again, back into the space of the mind from which they arose. Dujam Lingpa advises, watch these thoughts from afar. So there is a distance. You are not becoming the thoughts when they arise. He says, like a herder on a hillside watching his herd of cows. The most obvious appearances are what you could call objective appearances. These are thoughts, memories, images, all those that seem to be appearing to awareness. As if you're sitting on the curb watching the parade go by. The parade of objective appearances. The pith instruction is do not become distracted by these objective appearances. Meaning that you go wandering with the referent of that appearance. Meaning that if mother, for instance, comes up in your mind, you lose the witnessing distance of seeing that, oh, the thought, mother, has arisen. But you immediately go off wandering with the real mother, the referent. What is this a sign of or refer to? So to maintain the stillness of your awareness, do not be distracted by these objective appearances. And don't prefer one over another. But as you observe the movements of the mind, it also becomes clear that that is not the totality of your mental experience, these objective appearances. There are also what you could call subjective appearances or subjective impulses that seem to be a quality of the awareness that is watching these objective appearances. Some of these objective appearances I like, some I don't like. Powerful emotions seem to color the awareness that observes other things. View these subjective appearances as well, the qualities of awareness. Again, without preferring that they stay or that they go. Simply let them be and see them for what they are. Even these subjective appearances have no more substantiality than a dream. So the quintessential instruction, do not be distracted by objective appearances. And do not become identified with subjective appearances. Simply let them come and let them go.